Welcome back, everybody, and good morning. This is Frank Riccio, and we're on Talking About the Law. And I'm very fortunate to have as my guest today Mike Lennon, who is not only a trial attorney, but also a pharmacist with a doctorate in pharmacology. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. Glad to still be here. You didn't kick me out yet.
Not yet. I haven't kicked anyone out, so this would definitely be a first. Mike, one of the things with pharmacy cases we have to deal with is what's called a drug dosage response. What's that all about? How does that work?
Well, some drugs cause people to have different responses. That's why every medication that you get should be patient specific. You shouldn't be treated like a number. And just the same dosage given to everybody. There are certain drugs that no matter how much you give, you have to monitor the blood levels, like Coumadin. A lot of people know what Coumadin is because it's given to people who've had strokes or cardiac surgeries, and it's known as the blood thinner. And that's something that you take, and it comes in 12 different strengths, so that tells you something. And so someone who responds to, say, 2 milligrams might have the exact same response as someone else who responds to 10 milligrams. And they actually decide the dosage based on the blood levels of Coumadin. So you have to go in every so often, every week, every 2 weeks at the beginning. And if 10 milligrams only produces a certain blood level for you, then that has to be lowered or raised. And then 2 milligrams might produce the same blood level for someone else. So that's called dosing to the blood level. And it's the minority of cases like that, but just dosage in the regular course, every dosage has to be patient specific is the big lesson.
And so, interestingly, you should say that because I had handled a case several years ago where they failed to monitor the patient, and the result was that the patient ended up developing a stroke.
Sure.
And in terms of the liability issues, in terms of monitoring. Are there specific lab tests that are done? How does that work?
Yeah, they do what's called a prothrombin time is one, and thromboplastin time. So they'll do those tests, and they know what it takes. If it comes out at a certain number, all different labs have different normative values. And if you're outside the range, they either decrease your dosage, increase the dosage until they find whatever dosage works for you, and then you can get the testing a little less often.
And assuming that type of scenario where you have a patient on Coumadin, in terms of liability, I'm assuming that the physician has to order the test, correct?
Yes.
And does the pharmacist have any role in any of this?
Ideally, yes, but practically, probably not. I wouldn't expect the pharmacist to ask the patient, you know, have you had your INR test done this month? Can you bring them in for me? That's probably like beyond as far as what a pharmacist is expected to do. If someone's Coumadin prescription changes from 2 milligrams to 10 milligrams, then a pharmacist on the ball will talk to the customer and say, you know, oh, what's up? You know, there's usually a pretty good relationship because the pharmacist is the person in the community. They're easier to talk to as long as they're not too busy than, say, a busy doctor usually. And so there are not so much today, but years ago when there was a drugstore and it wasn't a pharmacy, it was a drugstore on every corner, you'd go in and you'd talk to your neighborhood pharmacist and you'd call him by his first names and he would go to your kid's, you know, birthday party and bar mitzvah. It was a different time. But that still carries on today where you're able to converse with your pharmacist like you would your next door neighbor.
Would you advise most people who are taking medications to stay consistently with one pharmacist as opposed to shopping around?
Yes. When you shop around with different pharmacists, that's called pharmacy shopping. That's pretty easy. And what happens is all the computer systems for one chain are all connected for that chain. But if you go to two different chains or you go to, you know, Jack's Corner Pharmacy, that's not connected to everybody. You know, we're going maybe toward that with all these new laws, but we're not there yet. And certainly there's a question as to whether we should be there. But when you do different pharmacies, if one isn't talking to the other, that's when you get a problem. Same thing with doctors. If you go into five different doctors and they're not talking to each other, then you're going to get some cross stuff going on that might not work to your benefit.
Well, especially with today's technology, I mean, talking doesn't necessarily mean conversation. It could mean texting, faxing, or anything like that.
Yep, anything that's available to you. Obviously, I'm an old school guy. I think talking is best. But if that's not available to you, then you find out what is available to you. And if you have questions, you ask them, and you keep asking them until you get an answer.
Now, one of the things that all of us get when we get our prescriptions is we'll usually get a sheet with side effects, and the side effect sheet is usually pretty long and basically incomprehensible the average layperson. What is the duty of the pharmacist in terms of explaining that to patients? Is that done? And if it isn't, how should it be done?
Yeah, they do have a duty to counsel customers on new prescriptions. So if you go in and it's a new antibiotic for you, you've never had it before, and there are certain side effects to it or certain things you should avoid, maybe you shouldn't go in the sun, maybe you shouldn't drink alcohol, then they have a duty to talk to you about that. When they give you that piece of paper, there's an argument out there that that substitutes for them sitting down and talking with you. But the law is that if they are going to give you that piece of paper, then the information in that piece of paper needs to be comprehensive. They can't leave out something that a reasonable pharmacist would want a customer to know. So if they're going to do it, they have to do it right.
As a practical matter, legally, does that sheet of paper cover the pharmacist in terms of side effects should a side effect happen?
It will help cover them. It depends. If I have someone come in and say, you know, there are these six side effects on here, and I didn't know that there was, say, an 80% chance of this one versus a 5% chance of that one, and if I knew that, then I would have called the doctor and asked for a different medication. Now we have a problem, and I can make an argument that a reasonable pharmacist would have told them that additional information, or the pharmacy chain or the individual pharmacy would have put in those percentages so that you have you are the ultimate decision maker, and you can't make a good decision as a patient, as a customer, no matter what product you buy. And here you're buying a product. You can't make a good decision unless you're informed about the factors that go into the decision. You can't make it blind.
Now, I'm going to segue into antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
And there's much litigation about antidepressants in terms of prescribing antidepressants, in terms of side effects like suicide and homicidal ideation.
Sure.
Could you explain just generally what an antidepressant is and how it's used?
Yeah, an antidepressant, there are different types of antidepressants, but what they essentially do is alter the chemicals in your nervous system. So whether it's dopamine or serotonin, the quantities of those chemicals going through your nerve synapses are altered. And so if serotonin or dopamine or a couple other ones, if they make someone feel better, it's kind of like a runner's high. You know, when you get off a treadmill after 40 minutes, you can't explain it, but you feel really good. That's brain chemicals saying good job. So if those are low in a person, then there is a way to bring them out more. And that's what they call antidepressants. So you're not walking around sullen and forlorn all the time. They increase your brain chemicals, and it makes you feel better. That's where those feelings come from. So that they've designed the drugs to do that.
And just going down the liability chain, typically those drugs are prescribed by physicians. Is that correct?
Yes. Sometimes nurse practitioners or physician's assistants, but they always have a doctor over their shoulder, or they should.
And do those drugs have side effects?
They do. They're infamous for side effects. If you might remember the acronym SLUD, S-L-U-D, salivation, lacrimation, urination, defecation, these things affect other parts of the body. And what happens is you need to be aware of that, because if the downside of the side effects outweighs the benefits of the drug itself, then you should know about that so that you can weigh the risks and benefits, and you know your body better than anyone else. So those side effects should be made known to you so they don't come as a surprise. Imagine starting a new drug and not realizing that you're going to wake up in the morning with dry eyes so that it's hard to open your eyes and it's painful and you have to use artificial tears. I'd want to know that.
And does a pharmacist have a duty to explain that to a patient who is being put on those drugs?
Yes. Absolutely.
And you talked about salivation, lacrimation. What were the other two?
Yeah, you get dry mouth.
Yep.
Or it affects your urinary system where you don't go to the bathroom as much because the antidepressants kind of dry you up a little bit all throughout your body. And so there's no way around it. It's not every antidepressant. It's just a certain class of them. But you should be aware of that so that you know when it's coming, you know if it's something that you can handle.
Mike, thank you. We have to take another break, but when we come back, I'm going to continue on that line of questioning. Thanks again, and we'll be back.